Why did Frederick III risk his realm of Saxony to protect Martin Luther and the developing reforms of the church? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April is Frederick the Wise, Seen and Unseen Lives of Martin Luther's Protector. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Frederick the Wise by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April, Frederick the Wise.
We've come here tonight to support a man that we believe loves you and loves this country, Senator Marco Rubio. You're not supposed to clap in a prayer.
I actually don't know why they treat abortion like a sacrament. They really think it is an important thing to have the right to kill unborn children.
The idea that religions can just be nudged and altered along by the power of the state is an astoundingly stupid statement.
The church is a hospice, not a hospital trying to make us better. It's not a school trying to teach us. It's a hospice that's trying to prepare us to die.
Missouri dairy farmers love Issues Etc.
If you look the term up in the dictionary, if you happen to have one of those sitting on your shelf, more likely if you Google the term fascism, you're going to find a long Wikipedia article that explains the origin of the term. And then as you scroll down, you're going to start to see some pictures that look, well, more or less familiar. You'll see a picture of Adolf Hitler. You'll see one of Mussolini. You'll see the other lesser known monsters of fascism from the 20th century. And many people don't believe that a totalitarian viewpoint that would rob the citizens of every civil freedom, including religious freedom, could possibly exist in the 21st century, not possibly in the United States of America. But are we hearing the echoes, the rumblings of fascist ideas, especially when it comes to the media and especially when it comes to the issue of same-sex marriage? Recently in the New York Times, we heard a very respected columnist say that the church leaders ought to be made to take homosexuality off the sin list. It's mildly fascist statement, isn't it? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. Gene Edward Veith is going to join us here in the first 40 minutes or so to talk about fascism and the echoes that we hear still today in the 21st century West a little bit later. Terry Mattingly will join us. We're going to talk about an Orthodox priest in Chicago, Patrick Henry Reardon, who has come up with a unique solution to the requirement, what he believes is a moral requirement being made on him by the state of Illinois. He's just not going to require or sign any more Illinois marriage licenses. He will still perform weddings and solemnize marriages, but he just won't sign the documents for the state. We'll see what Terry thinks about that and how the media is likely to cover it. Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will join us right after that to do Christ in the Old Testament. Genesis 31, the God of Bethel. God is appearing to all sorts of people there in that chapter. We'll find out all about it a little bit later here on Issues Etc. You can join us for the next 2 hours if you have questions or comments. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at issuesetc. Or our beloved on-demand listeners, we know that you often listen behind the times, but you still want to join the conversation. That is perfectly fine. That's why we have the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about fascism on this Thursday afternoon, Dr. Gene Edward Veith, Provost and Professor of Literature at Patrick Henry College in Purcellville, Virginia, author of numerous books, including Modern Fascism, The Threat to the Judeo-Christian Worldview. Dr. Veith, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Good to be with you again.
If you Google fascism, and unfortunately many people have to get their information on it that way nowadays because mm-hmm. it's not taught necessarily in schools, if you Google it, you get pictures of Adolf Hitler, Mussolini, Juan Perón, Francisco Franco. People say, look, these are monsters. These are the monsters of the 20th century. We live in a democratic republic of the United States. We have the Constitution. Fascism cannot take root here in America. What's your response?
Well, fascism was a kind of a mashup of a lot of ideas that are still very much with us. Darwinism, the idea of eugenics, breeding, and a super race, and getting rid of the life unworthy of life. Romanticism, a romanticized view of nature and the self, Nietzschean existentialism, the idea that we create our own values, all brought together by what's really kind of early postmodernist thinkers. And all of these things that went together to create a really monstrous political and social and really religious ideology, these things are still with us. And we see them coming back in kind of different forms, but I worry that they may have the same results.
What about what we find perhaps even in the last month or so? Maybe the echoes of fascism in the Indiana freedom of religion law, and the reaction that has been coming forth so strongly from gay activist groups and the media?
Well, first of all, the way that religious liberty is just being run over, roughshod, it's not even an issue, shows a real shift in the way Americans think. The idea that we have certain inalienable rights, and that these are objective, and that other laws and practices have to honor those. That's not held now by so many people. And again, that was the way it was under the fascists, the idea that rights are creations of the state. The state can create new rights, and it can take rights away. And there's nothing that really trumps the authority of the sort of the immanent state and the will of the people, which creates its own new values. And so just the kind of audacity in rejecting, I mean, first of all, the idea that we can create a new kind of marriage, something that no culture, no period in history, even culture that are very, open to homosexuality, never occurred to them to have gay marriage, but it doesn't matter. We can make our own institution by the authority of the state. Okay, that would be recognizable to some of the fascist theorists, but also then the way, that religious liberty issues, again, are just run roughshod. More than that, though, and where it really is the kind of the mob mentality that believes that people who disagree with you need to be punished, that society needs to rally against them and do what they can to silence them and destroy them. I mean, that's startling. I was just looking through my book, which I wrote some time ago, and Hitler talks about tolerance. One of the reasons the Jews were hated so much was supposedly their intolerance. And the irony of the Nazis were so intolerant of the Jews or anyone else, but that principle of believing there's a right and a wrong, and you need to stand up for what's right, that approach to moral reasoning was associated with the Jews, this idea of a transcendent moral law. And of course, that comes from the Bible and Christianity. And there was a big effort among the fascists to sort of recast Christianity as a cultural religion and to reject the elements of the Bible that have been so influential in America, in Western civilization. And that was the enemy, and that was blamed on the Jews. And so now you see sometimes Christians kind of being put in that same place in the rhetoric of the kind of the dominant media today.
Recently, we had a New York Times op-ed piece where Frank Bruni quoted someone approvingly saying that Christian leaders need to be made to take homosexuality off the sin list. And yeah, he said this is he called it a command and a good one at that. What's your response?
Well, that's a return to the fascist mindset. And the fascists had their thinkers and their theorists, and it's really helpful to read that and be aware of it, and you see the parallels. Postmodernists today say everything is just power, And the first phase of it is sort of a critical view. So, oh, well, the people in power are just having their way, and, you know, it's the wealthy white men are in power, and you have all of that. But reducing everything, law, morality, ethics, aesthetics, everything to just power. But then the next step of that, if you believe that, then you will exercise power to crush the opposition, to impose your will on them. And it's just, that's just the next step. At first, it sounds kind of mild and even kind of liberating. But then if you really believe that, then the next step is to use that power against those who oppose you. I read something the other day where a person was arguing that in order to save the planet, we can't have democracy and individual liberties, because those are the things that have just been destroying the planet, that we really need to return to something, he said, that some would call totalitarian systems. And it's going to take that kind of government to do what needs to be done in order to save the planet. Okay, so we're having people, thoughtful, intellectual people, actually advocating totalitarianism, the suppression of dissent, and it's almost always religious dissent, and that's socially acceptable today. That's what the beginnings of return to fascism look like.
A couple questions in that respect. Of course, fascism has historically targeted religious dissent because it is a principled dissent. It's not simply opinion. These are not opinions held by religiously minded people. These are essential worldview, the constituents of their essential worldview that are held by those people. So why
That's
is
right.
that?
Well, to understand fascism, you need to understand, again, the worldview issues and why the fascists and the different varieties were so antagonistic to the Jews. It wasn't just racism or ethnic issues. It was the ideas of the Jews. And the fascists were looking for a worldview that was kind of prior to the Jewish influence on Western civilization, that is, the biblical influence. They said that the belief in one God, for example, one transcendent God, instead of all the nature gods of the old paganism, just one transcendent God drained the spiritual significance out of nature. And so ever since, we've been exploiting nature. The fascists were some of the first environmentalists, actually. And that was one of the things, this idea of one transcendent God. The idea of transcendent ethics, the idea that there is a right and wrong that's tied to the character and the person of that God, that, according to them, makes people feel guilty. It keeps us from being natural, from acting on our natural impulses, such as sex and violence and aggression. You know, we are animals. We are creatures of nature, and human beings need to act that way. Otherwise, we feel guilty and weak and the like. And of course, in that they added Darwinism, the survival of the fittest and the cult of the strongest and so on. The Jews also gave us individualism, the idea of people, the individual having a value of its own other than just the value of the community. This creates alienation. The idea that we can criticize our leaders because we have a transcendent moral code, we can look even at our leaders and see when they're not acting the way they should. So in the West, we have a tradition of criticizing our governments. I mean, even sometimes to a fault. Well, that creates political alienation, they argued. And again, all of these bad things derive from the sort of the Jewish influence, that is, the influence of the Bible, biblical thinking. They wanted a sense of being one with nature, one with the community or the society or the state. They wanted human beings to express their inmost desires without any kind of repression or guilt. And again, just point by point by point. And then other things came into it. Darwinistic views dovetailed in with a lot of the eugenics movement. And so euthanasia became a big feature of the fascist idea. And of course now euthanasia has really come back, whole countries, and now some American states are legalizing euthanasia. They're using the same arguments that the fascist advocates were using, again, abortion on demand, even homosexuality, oddly enough. There was a big strain of a homosexual movement within the Nazi Party, the so-called brown shirts. That was part of their kind of manly mystique. And later, in the political reactions against that, they were suppressed. And yes, homosexuals, eventually many of them were taken to the concentration camps too. But in the early days, this was one of the kind of freedoms that they were proposing, though they soon would, of course, shut down virtually all freedoms. But it's a worldview. It was an attempt to go back to the old paganism before Christianity came, to the point that, you know, Hermann Göring and others, they revived some of the old Germanic pagan festivals and idolatrous practices in a way to go back to what they thought was a more natural kind of spirituality.
Dr. Gene Edward Veith is our guest. We're talking about fascism on this Thursday afternoon, April the 23rd. When we come back, is fascism itself a religion? We'll be right back.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/lutheracademy.
A confessional liturgical Lutheran congregation in southeast Michigan in Rochester Hills. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word. That's LCIW.org. We gather for the divine service every Sunday, 9:30 a.m. at Lutheran High School Northwest. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word. Find us on the internet at LCIW.org.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
We Lutherans were never aided by following along with some other tradition's theological priorities and catchphrases.
Issues, Etc. regular guest, Pastor Heath Curtis, coordinator for stewardship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on a Lutheran approach to stewardship.
Other folks are not approaching it from our good, solid Lutheran understanding of law and gospel and vocation. There's a place to talk about this in Christianity, and we have a way of talking about stewardship as Lutherans without ever using the word stewardship, if you like. I'm going to talk to you today about your vocation in your home, in your church, in your society, and how each one of these makes a claim on you, on your presence, on your support, on your prayers. That's how we should talk about this as Lutherans.
You'll find several stewardship resources at lcms.org/stewardship. lcms.org/stewardship. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Gene Edward Veith is our guest. He's Provost and Professor of Literature at Patrick Henry College in Purcellville, Virginia. Author of numerous books, including Modern Fascism, The Threat to the Judeo-Christian Worldview. We're talking about fascism. Before the break, you were discussing fascism's hostility toward religious sensibilities, principled sensibilities, as in the case of the Jews in Western Europe, but today in the United States, increasingly more so Christians. Is fascism itself a religion?
I'd say so, and it claims to be. That's another thing about it. It's totalitarian in the sense that it's total. It gives a total answers to just about everything, including religious issues. Again, part of it is that pagan desire. They believe that the gods and nature and the society were all one, under the old pagan regime. And that's what they want to return to, so that what the community, what the nation wants, becomes a religion. And that's in line with nature, including, you know, the strong killing out the weak. That's part of that mystique. So it really is a religion. It's a religion without transcendence. It's a religion without a sense that there's something more and beyond this world that we can see. It's a religion that takes a different approach to ethics. Ethics is what we choose by the will, and we impose our will on the world. And it's an ethic built around that imposition of the will. I mean, even today, though, you look at the arguments for abortion. They don't call themselves that. We're pro-abortion, usually. We're pro-choice. Pro-choice. And again, that's ethics of the will. Whatever the woman chooses is right for her, because what makes it right is that there is a choice. And so pretty soon, and that's another reason why they enforce such ideological uniformity, because they believe not just in the will of individuals, but the collective will, what the culture wills as expressed in its leader. Anyone who willed something different than what everybody else was willing was a traitor and somebody who's breaking this wonderful unity. And so they had to be eliminated. And that's one reason why there's no room for any variation of opinion in the fascist mind. And again, I think we're coming to that even now here, because, you know, it's not enough to allow homosexuality or to allow gay marriage. The insistence is that people approve of it, say it's good. And if they don't, then they will be subject to punishment and sanctions and boycotts and just stereotypical demonization in the press. And again, it has to remind you of the propaganda that we saw back in the 30s and 40s in Europe.
In that vein, let's talk about the role of the media. I think what might be assumed is, well, the state doesn't. We have a First Amendment of freedom of the press, and the state does not control what the press prints. The obvious proof of that is that the press is one of the, and still does remain to this day, a place where the powers that be, those who govern us, are daily excoriated, criticized, in some places even mocked. So we are far from a propagandist state.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's true. We're far from what finally came with the Third Reich and with Mussolini and so on. The danger is, what path are we going on? But here's an answer to your question. The media doesn't have to be controlled if the people in the media, all of their own volition, of their own will, agree with the cultural orthodoxy. Again, it's the view was not just of a like we see in the World War II movies, you know, the government, the evil dictators controlling the people by force. And of course, that was part of it. But the goal of it was that the public would voluntarily buy into, and that the government would be a spokesman of the popular will. And so I think a big part of this is the role of the dominant culture. And it's true that the media will criticize politicians and even, you know, mock and make fun of certain politicians if they're easy targets. I mean, the media's being pretty rough, and the comedians are being pretty rough on Hillary Clinton today. But you won't find them questioning homosexuality or gay marriage. It doesn't go to that. I mean, they can criticize and mock individuals, but the underlying ideology, and it's not enforced by a government. Rather, the government itself is being shaped by the popular will. And, I mean, that was more the goal than just setting up an explicit police state that is going to take away everybody's freedom. They never presented themselves as doing that. I mean, it's kind of what it amounted to eventually. But the spirit of it, the ideology, was this cultural unity where everybody is together and dissenting voices are silenced or eliminated, again, for the good of all.
Talk about what you mentioned and actually have mentioned here several times, and that is while it is first sold under the guise of permitting freedom, kind of a natural freedom of man, it eventually finds it necessary through the force of the state to infringe upon all freedoms.
Yeah, yeah. There's been a lot of good scholarship on that, on kind of the way revolutions develop. And at first, revolutions, and you see this with the communist revolution, as well as the fascist revolution, as well as the Iranian radical Muslim revolution when the Shah was overthrown. It starts, the rhetoric is all about freedom and equality and values like that, because they want to destroy the old regime. And so they want rebellion against that. They want freedom against that. But once that regime is overthrown, then it changes. Then freedom becomes what the enemies of the new state want. And equality, again, gives way to the hierarchies of the new social order. And so in revolutionary propaganda, you'll always see that progression. By the way, I would say that another interesting example of fascism is the Islamic fascism, which is an actual fascism. It's Islamic, but the Islamic religion, in focusing on Sharia law, wanting a divine state, ISIS, the Islamic state that's sacred. And again, just the problem is when you unleash this, Christians understand this, when you unleash the will, when you unleash power, so you have complete power over other people that can't resist you, the result is monstrous and horrible, and we're seeing in the atrocities of ISIS and other kind of Islamic fascist radicals, we're seeing that already, just in the same way, in the same very extreme way that we later saw in with Hitler and Mussolini. ISIS is doing those horrible things, and again, stamping out transcendent religions, again, all justified by their very glorious rhetoric that will justify everything, because the ends justify the means, and the establishment of this utopian state can only happen when the undesirable elements are eliminated.
Dr. Gene Edward Veith is our guest. We're talking about fascism on this Thursday. He's provost and professor of literature at Patrick Henry College in Purcellville, Virginia, and author of numerous books, including Modern Fascism, The Threat to the Judeo-Christian Worldview. When we come back, is there a threshold that's been crossed, especially in the Supreme Court, with Justice Anthony Kennedy recently saying that the only reason anyone would oppose so-called marriage equality is religious bigotry. Is there a threshold there with the echoes of fascism? We'll get to that on the other side of the break. I like the phrase that Dr. Veith used there, that fascism is a religion without transcendence. It's built entirely on at least secular fascism, built entirely on a naturalistic viewpoint. Man is mere product of Darwinian evolution, mere animal, just happens to sit at the top of the food chain. It's a really good reason, if you agree with the danger of that kind of thinking, to hear Dr. David Menton at our Issues Etc. Making the Case conference, making the case for creation. Other speakers at the conference will include Dr. Paul Meyer, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, Chris Roseborough, Jonathan Fisk, and Pastor Will Wheaton. Registration for adults for the conference, $100. Child care is provided, $35 per child. Now, attendance this year is limited to 400, so don't wait to register. You can find out more about the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference Friday, June the 19th and Saturday, June the 20th, right here in Collinsville, Illinois, at issuesetc.org, or contact Craig, 618-223-8382. Send him an email, craig@issuesetc.org. We'll be right back.
It is the greatest adventure you could ever possibly imagine. It's demanding, it's hard, it's challenging, and what a blessing it is.
Dr. Larry Rast, president of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on why a man should consider the vocation of pastor.
And it is an incredible blessing to be honored with the opportunity to work with these incredible young men and older men as well, who are committing themselves to the proclamation of God's word, the right distinction of law and gospel, and to take the good news of Jesus Christ into all the world.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu or call 1-800-481-2155. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, forming servants in Jesus Christ who teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. Pilgrim Lutheran, Santa Monica, California. Emmanuel Lutheran, Terre Haute, Indiana. Trinity Lutheran, San Angelo, Texas. Trinity Lutheran and Emmanuel Lutheran, Holloway, Minnesota. St. John Lutheran, Schaumburg, Illinois. Our Savior Lutheran, Pipestone, Minnesota. Real Lutheran Fellowship, Rochester, Minnesota. Living Word Lutheran Church, The Woodlands, Texas. St. James Lutheran, Logansport, Indiana. St. John's Lutheran, State Center, Iowa, and Trinity Lutheran, West Chicago, Illinois. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues, Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues, Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues, Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues, Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. We're talking about fascism. Dr. Gene Edward Veith is our guest. A little bit later, Terry Mattingly is going to join us. We're going to talk about an Orthodox priest in Chicago who has decided that he isn't going to require or sign Illinois marriage licenses. It's a matter of conscience. He says he's not making a political statement. He's making a theological statement. We'll see what Terry thinks about that and talk about the media coverage of that story in a little bit here on Issues, Etc. Then Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will join us. We'll continue our series, Christ in the Old Testament. Today, Genesis chapter 31, the God of Bethel, the God of the house of God. A little story of Jacob and Laban and some others in there with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. Dr. Veith, I'm wondering about this happened late last year, and it's something that I think has kind of been rolling around in my head, an example of perhaps nascent antagonism toward religion that characterizes secular fascism. Justice Anthony Kennedy, in a decision that he opined on, talked about, and this is a Supreme Court justice. I'm not saying he's a fascist. I'm just saying what I heard there had the echoes of fascism. He said, and you know about this, the only reason anyone would oppose the redefinition of marriage or same-sex marriage is because of religious bigotry. Now, that's the Supreme Court. Has a threshold there been crossed toward that kind of antagonism of religion that is characterized in secular fascism?
Oh, I hadn't thought of that example, but I mean, he's just categorizing all rational arguments, as bigotry, and then just as a way to just dismiss them as religious bigotry. And Yeah, I mean, and by his authority that he has as a judge to kind of create the law, not just interpret it as judges, as traditional jurisprudence had, he can impose his view and just wipe away thousands of years of human social and moral as well as religious practices just by fiat. It's just staggering.
What historically becomes of a church, because the church certainly continued to exist in Mussolini's Italy, it continued to exist in Hitler's Western Europe. But what becomes of a church that compromises with fascism?
Well, in my book, I show the influence, or I show how liberal Christianity was implicated and very much involved in the fascist movement, because the liberal theology teaches that the culture sets the agenda for the church. So the church basically follows the culture wherever it leads. And so if the culture is embracing gay marriage, well, we'll embrace gay marriage. If the culture, you know, turns against traditional sex morality, then we have to downplay it too. If the culture isn't interested in doctrine, then we'll not emphasize doctrine anymore. That's what makes a liberal theology, and it takes many different forms depending on what the culture is doing at the time. But that mindset that the church follows the culture, that was just dominant in the state church, certainly in Germany in the first half of the 20th century. Well, today too. But back then, the culture was going towards fascist ideology, to all the different things that we've been talking about. I show how some of the biblical critics, ones that are still cited today in liberal seminaries, had as part of their agenda eliminating the Jewish element from Christianity. And in their criticism of the Bible, and they say this in just so many words, in their critique of the Bible, and wanting to get the church away from the authority of the Bible, they were trying to make Christianity into just another cultural religion. And then when Nazism grew stronger and stronger, there was a movement called the German Christians, who were Nazi, who believed in the Nazification of the church. They took over the state church, and they did things like vote to remove the Old Testament from the Bible, just all kind of just astonishing kind of idolatries. Now, there were the confessing Christians, the confessional Christians, the confessional Lutherans like Hermann Sasse, fine, wonderful theologian to this day, as well as, you know, some in the Reformed group like Barth, and some even in the state church like Bonhoeffer and others, the confessing one. And I would say these are the real believers. Despite the range of theology they represented, they opposed this. They called it the paganization of the church, the incursion of idolatry into the church, and they criticized it and fought it as much as they could. Some of them gave their lives for those convictions. And it's the same today. So many people want cultural conformity. And without even questioning what's happening in the culture, again, confessing Christians are those who stand up and say, no, we're building our faith on the Word of God, and not what the culture happens to be doing at this moment, because the culture is not our authority. The culture is not the sacred thing that we have to follow. That's idolatry. Returning to that word against all costs and against all persecution, that's what's going to have to happen in our day too, I'm afraid.
Two final things, Dr. Veith. If history is any teacher here, and it is, especially in Western Europe, it is that fascism descends rather swiftly. I mean, there's a reason why people were taken off guard, why Nazism was not at first by otherwise very observant, very careful and thinking people, even in America. It was not seen for what it became. So it descends swiftly. What would your thoughts be on our current state here in the United States, especially with issues surrounding morality, marriage, life, all of those things in that vein?
Well, I don't know what the answer is, what to counter it. Things may have to run their course. But you're right, it did happen very quickly and was surprising to people how far things had come. And I know, again, I want to emphasize we're not there yet. I don't want to be alarmist. We do have great freedoms in this country still. But for the first time in my memory, they're actually being challenged openly by very influential people. So I think we just have to be vigilant. We have to be careful. We have to be strong. And while we have the liberty, we need to use that to make our positions, our arguments, our worldview plain, and why we don't to go along with everything, all these other cultural fashions. So while we have the liberty, we need to be using it. Otherwise, again, we can lose it really fast.
Week by week, the church worldwide prays for a government, for leaders, for elected officials, for those who govern us in every capacity, regardless of what the politics of the particular place that church finds itself in. But week after week, the church is praying, as it is commanded to do, for kings and authorities. What would your thoughts be there, finally, on the church's need to continue to do this very thing?
Well, I think that is what we need to do, and that is a big part of the answer, to pray for, and especially the non-believers, the persecutors. We're to pray for our persecutors. And so intentional prayer for our leaders, that they would, that God would turn their hearts, that they would rule in a just way. We're not asking for much. We're not talking about imposing a, you know, theocratic society. Ironically enough, that's more what the other side is kind of wanting to do. We just want to live peaceably and in peaceable and orderly existence. Yeah, I think praying for our leaders, praying for our country, praying for the rule of law, I think is something very important for us to do. The fact is, the times of cultural hostility have been the greatest times for the church, usually. I mean, the great period of persecution in the Roman Empire. Eventually, the emperor was converted, and things changed pretty rapidly, too. But in a democratic system, we're all the rulers, because our elected officials are just the ones that the people pick. And so we need to pray for each other also, and that what's good in the society can continue. And the Doctrine of Two Kingdoms says we're citizens of both kingdoms, the kingdom of heaven and the kingdom of this world. And again, fascism destroys that. It's only one kingdom, and the kingdom of the Lord just swallows up the kingdom of the spiritual kingdom. So I think Christians do well to be active in the culture, active politically, active in every other way, without making our politics our religion, as so often happens, which just plays into the destruction of real, true religion and plays into the neo-fascist hands. But at the same time, you know, we have a stronger foundation than just this world. And I think the more we can build on that and grow in that, probably the more stable we'll be as citizens in this world.
Dr. Gene Edward Veith is provost and professor of literature at Patrick Henry College in Purcellville, Virginia, author of numerous books, including Modern Fascism, The Threat to the Judeo-Christian Worldview. You can purchase it by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or you can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Ed, thank you very much for your time.
Oh, my pleasure.
When we come back, Terry Mattingly of GetReligion.org will be our guest. We're going to talk about Patrick Henry Reardon, an Orthodox priest in Chicago who's decided not to require or sign Illinois marriage licenses. Hollywood's attitude toward Christianity, the Bible's influence on the U.S. Constitution, the decline of biblical preaching, the connection between biblical illiteracy and Western morality. You'll find these essays and more in the new book, The Word They Still Shall Let Remain, The Place of the Holy Scriptures in the Faith and Life of Confessional Lutherans. Check it out at shop.logia.org. The Word They Still Shall Let Remain, shop.logia.org.
Vision Casting Leaders in the Church, Differences Between Men and Women, Naturalism, Biblical Archaeology. You can meet and hear Issues Etc. regular guests discussing these topics at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 19th and 20th in Collinsville, Illinois. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Registration is $100 per person. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 19th and 20th in Collinsville, Illinois.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Hey, St. Louis. How would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952, Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.